Blog Talk Radio.
Many people regard you as a personification of Ubuntu. What do you understand Ubuntu to be?
In the old days, when we were young, a traveler through a country would stop at a village. And he didn't have to ask for food or for water. Once he stops, the people give him food, entertain him. That is one aspect of Ubuntu, but it will have various aspects. Ubuntu does not.
The open source report on the 16th of May 2016. You may hear, we've been a busy time over the winter season here at Cranston. This is a joint production of WBRN Radio and Cranston Software. It's set up as a non-profit type venture. We don't make a penny off of this. Any products that are here, we do not resell them or sell them directly. So thus, as the late performer Prince said, we don't have a horse in the race. We'll get on with it, starting with the kernel version, very important here. The current stable one, 4.6, has been released by Linus. And I think we are running 4.4.10. We'll get that upgraded. We run Slackware here. Make that known to everyone. We'll start by looking at the Raspberry Pi. The Raspberry Pi has, what do we call it, the Pi? Anyway, nonetheless, has a number of applications out. This one is HSCI. C develops a Raspberry Pi telehealth kit. And we'll put this on our show notes, get it up as soon as we are able to here. The Health and Social Care Information Center uses open source, agile, and agility, I should say, in creating the Raspberry Pi telehealthcare kit that can connect to the NHS. And let's get down to a little bit of it here. Both software and hardware open source. MedPi project aims to address one of the reasons why telehealth uptake at the National Health Service remains relatively slow. Affordability. The host system demonstrate program, which is the Department of Health, is set up to find evidence supporting the use of telehealth. Incidentally, the National Health Service is in the UK. The research found that adding a conventional telehealth measures to the usual core would cost £92,000 per quality adjustment adjusted life, and was unlikely to ever be cost effective. Although most agree, remote monitoring of patients with long-term conditions is beneficial for patients and the health service. the WSD program casts doubt on its affordability. However, the HSCIC may have come up with the answer. MedPi, using the Raspberry Pi and a 7-inch touchscreen tablet and a set of equipment such as a blood pressure cuffs, a finger monitor, and some diagnostic scales, all off-the-shelf products, coming to a total of about £250. As easy as pie. Richard Robinson, a technical integrator specialist, came up with the idea after his wife went to find volunteers to participate in a telehealth pilot study. The kit she brought home, which included a free 3G-enabled tablet, Bluetooth-enabled device, and a home hub. Robinson, through a solid expense, he decided to look into a much cheaper, and he could do it himself. The cost for the telehealth is crazy when you think about it. Devices like the Raspberry Pi are being don't have my glasses on at £32, so I thought I could definitely do it cheaper. That's the cost of the Raspberry Pi. Robinson developed a prototype, which was a simple interface using a dashboard for easy interaction. A towel represented a device such as a blood pressure cuff, etc. Around 900,000 people in the UK suffer a heart failure every year, and 30-40% of the patients die in the first year of diagnosis. Monitoring weight, heart rate, blood pressure, oxygen level is linked to improving the quality of life and preventing hospital attendance. A secure network, each device can connect to the touchscreen tablet with a USB cable. However, Robinson said the way the software has been put together makes it easy to add a wireless interface device. Every byte of data can be encrypted separately so that they can only be seen by the recipient they're intended for. And that's a very good situation. And we'll skip, we'll finish this up. There has been a degree of market failure on the ground that telehealth is not affordable. And that is one of the things. We'll put this on the show notes so we'll make certain that you get it. Some of these are a collection of things we've collected, but nonetheless, at GoDaddy, there was a problem there. Domain register, many people use it, including us, and it was a problem with the XS bind was blamed. Now, we had a rip on the cross-site scripting attack called SS bind was to blame. Now, this is by researcher Matthew Bryant. The vulnerability affecting users affecting use by its custom support agents that could have been abused to take over, modify, or delete accounts. They nonetheless patched it, and we were alerted to it. And usually we follow these things up. Brian wrote on this Saturday that the name field on a particular GoDaddy page accepted our and assorted cross site scripting a payload. He left a generic payload behind, and akin to leaving mine that isn't triggered until someone stepped on it. It turns out that no one stepped on his particular one. This is Brian. Need to make a legitimate support call to GoDaddy. The rep on the phone could not access his account, and at the same time, Brian was getting an email that his almost a forgotten payload had fired. Bryant dug into the issue, which he privately disclosed to GoDaddy. This was back in December, and found that the attack had fired outside of his browser. Pen testers, as he said, often missed their type of attack because an attacker can drop their payload throughout a site and wait for them to be triggered. Common method there. The more you test for Blinds XSS, the more you realize that the game is about poisoning the data stores that applications read. For example, a user's database is likely read by more than just the main web application. This is likely a log viewing application, administrative panels, and data analytic services, which all draw from the same in storage, Brian wrote, and all of these services are just as likely to be vulnerable to the KSS. It's not only because they are often not as polished as the final web service that the end customer uses. And let me just skip on down here a bit. I'll post this article. Nonetheless, Brian said GoDaddy fixed the issue promptly, if not necessarily in a timely fashion. A timeline published on his blog, and I'll go to his blog, and it was on December 29th, and a day later was invited to join GoDaddy's private bug bounty. In February, GoDaddy informed him he was that this was a duplicate issue, and his findings was out of scope for the bounty. And 3 months have passed, and the issue had likely presented far longer. Bryant's request public disclosure, GoDaddy, because of the severity of the bug. This sometimes happens until a fix was a miracle. Another exchange on the 13th of April, resulting GoDaddy escalating the issue because it was finally fixed on the 25th. So this story goes from last year to the 25th, confirmed the fix 2 days, and a disclosure was on a Sunday. Brian said that the output encoding is one way to fix the issue, but it's much safer to prevent the storage of payloads. If you're simply ensure that the stored data is clean, you can prevent the exploitation of many systems because the payload would never be able to be stored in the first place. Obviously, ideally you would have both, but for companies with many services drawing from the same data source, you can't get a lot of win with just a little filter. Brian said this is the approach that GoDaddy took for the remediation, likely for the same service. We'll append his blog and look forward at it. This is kind of a summary article here on the GoDaddy episode. Nonetheless, It is fixed, and they have moved on. Now to Linus Torvalds. He finally, fairly a big kernel. This is a 4.6. It is finally out. Were you at the Linux.com? There's two or three different pronunciations, and this is Dr. Stallman over at the free software Linux, he calls it. Anyway, nonetheless, yesterday released the final code for the 6th version. This release comes 2 months after the previous version had gone through 7 release candidates. The kernel, on the whole, was a fairly big release. We, Tobias writes in his release notes on the mailing list, despite relatively calm the last few releases of the kernel 6, along with a fair share of interesting changes, many end users, excuse me, will notice performance improvements in temperature control of their laptops, for example, because this version closes a serious bug that caused thermal throbbing in some models of Lenovo laptops. Support for Dell laptops, including their Alienware game line of machines, has been improved. Didn't know Dell bought Alienware, but it's something new every day. Embedded machines also get a boost with support for new ARM-based their Sokos. These SoCs from Alienware there and Qualcomm. Broadcom, the maker of a lot of modems and other devices that we'll see improve support for their boards, including Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi, very, very important. We've been struggling on a notebook with Broadcom version. The Nexus 7 smartphones, and of course, the Raspberry Pi nano computer. The topic of ARM support here, architecture, is is clogging along nicely. Both performance enhancements and new features make their way into the current kernel. We used to, when we started out, the kernel was on, I think here, it had to be 2.5 disks, and then we could put it on a CD-ROM. Now one needs a DVD to install the compressed kernel. Another architect on the way to being on the way to being supported in the kernel is the power processors. Kind of interesting about that. The hardware is typically built into high-end servers, although power IBM has designed Linux as a default operating system for their line of power-based processors. They used to be in the Apple computers. Alex, over there, Alex, which means that IBM's input is likely that the power will be supported shortly. Most of the big changes in this version happened early in the development cycle. His latest release candidate was a correction of a long-standing interface problem. intraband. Intraband is used in high performance computers. So unless you are administrating a supercapacitor for supercomputers, well, you wouldn't worry about it at all. Despite the above, the last week of this development cycle was quite hectic, according to Lennox Torvalds. A slew of patches are pouring in, and most of which were corrections for drivers, including the Rayon driver, AMD CPUs. We use AMD CPUs here. And for the release candidate, Torvalds chastises this as a charred weasel. In a homage to the poor little furry fella. Anyway, nonetheless, let's just fly over here. This some of the stuff. Well, we won't go into it. Excuse me. We'll move on. More on the Raspberry Pi Sense Hat. And this is from open source, the Raspberry Pi Sense Hat, a low-cost addition to the Raspberry Pi, and a picture of it here. Basically, what it is a measuring device, an accelerometer for movement, barometer for pressure, for your meteorology courses, a gyroscope for rotation, a hydrometer for humidity, a joystick, a leads, that's basic output there, and a magnetometer for direction. And a thermometer for temperature. These are some of the things that have landed in this particular PI edition. And I think this is the one I went over some of this, I suppose. Enable astronauts and citizen scientists to run experiments. So we'll post this one also on the show notes. And let us happily move on here. Why Microsoft needs to run Linux software. It'll come out, incidentally, this summer. It is a sheer matter of market share there when you'll see it in Windows 10. And the WSL system that they will bear out has two parts. Let me grab my glasses to read just this little bit here. I'll also include this on the scale. Has the core subsystem, which is already included in the preview, and a package of software Connecticut. That Connecticut is the manufacturer of Ubuntu. The core subsystem is what provides the Linux API on Windows, including the ability to natively load Linux executables and libraries. Conica will provide Bosch, the old Bosch, and the command line tools that are expected in the Linux environment. It's positioning their WLS strictly as a tool for developers. So obviously, if you're not a developer, you probably wouldn't be interested in it. It's called the Windows subsystem for Linux. Nonetheless, it will be out there, and we'll also post this on our show notes. The WLS was derived from Project Astoria, which was an app to enable Android devices to run on Windows 10. There is a Windows 10 version for mobile or smartphones, but it's not selling very well. So thus, they needed some other way to do it. There's no Linux kernel system here, so this won't bring support if a file system, etc. There, you won't be able to do that. Application demanding low-level access to hardware devices. Well, anyway, that one of those strange situations there. Why develop on that platform in the first place? Went back 25 years and Windows was the only serious platform for software developers. Linux was already an important contribution, remember that, for servers. But on the desktop, even less of a concern than it is today. Reserved only for the hardware fans, he called it here. OS X was in infancy, that's the Apple hardware system. And it was the underpowered power PC hardware, which we just talked about. And thus goes on. The story of MySQL, the MySQL developers. Of course, Oracle now has that. It will run on Windows. And a much better database, Postgres, as SQL. excuse me, used to be commonly known as the German edition, as a better database. MySQL, of course, is better known, no doubt about that. And it's installed on Windows. So thus, unless you look, and some editions do include Postgres, in Slackware, MySQL is still there. It's not a great surprise, there's an article here. But MySQL proliferated in a way Postgres SQL did not. Well, that's one of the getting Ruby running as well on any platform, but Windows is arguably worse. Well, you wouldn't run Ruby on Windows. A lot of developers now use the MacBooks. Looking through this article, very, very long, concerning Visual Studio C and C-sharp, as they call it, compiles, for example, a lack of support for C99. But a program is out there, C99, the version of C language that was standardized 17 years ago. Repeated requests to Microsoft to add C99 support. There was always a pushback on C99. Microsoft came out of the proprietary world, not a world of openness. Windows developers couldn't write C99 because the main Windows, anyway, that's the compiler there. We talked about it before. And let's skip down here. We won't get into all that. I'll add this article there also, and to the Windows subsystem for Linux. Genuine, the OS system are still required for building iOS. In other words, the Apple software, iOS, is a proprietary software, although it runs on free BBS there, but it also has proprietary in it. The same is for Android, that although there's an open source Android project that is there, but it's becoming more standardized. Our theory is that over the next months and perhaps a year or so, that many of these operating systems will become more standardized and more open. Now, where Windows 10 will go, and we occasionally talk about Windows 10 from the standpoint of securing Windows 10, but that is a subsystem that is out there. And also, if you use the Android, which is the most popular system for smartphones, you'll find some Microsoft applications there, such as their a cloud application includes Office, and all those products can run on in Android system, and that's just a market share decision that Microsoft made to have those out there. And one troubling point is, being around universities, been taking some university courses the last two semesters, that students are indoctrinated with, I believe it's Microsoft 360. It's free, you can put it on, as opposed to Libre Suite, which we have on our various platforms, including an older laptop runs well there. So this is the big fight, but the push tends to be as open source software obviously is gaining traction, and it is the software of the cloud. From the consumers, it doesn't matter as much because the share of desktops is down. Now, Alien, that's for gamers, you need that. But many, many people that have notebooks, and there are various ones on what is the PC side. Now, remember, on the Apple side, the Intel processor is running it. But for AMD, where we are, the desktops, you start getting into 6-8 cores, and then, of course, you're going into the Opto... the Opto-ROM chips, which you're dealing there with 8 cores and multiple CPUs on a board. 2, 4, I believe 4 is the lowest you can get, 1632. You haven't checked lately, but those are the kinds of things if you really want to crunch. Now, also, you have the cloud. I was talking to a medical professional that was using one of the services, spinning up and an instance of, I believe, 8 cores for his particular data scrubbing project. So many, many people, especially if you have a one-of-a-kind project, will simply go to the cloud, get the project done, and move on. So when you're dealing with a mobile-type computing situation where there are laptops out there, and more frequently people now are using the smartphone for what used to be the desktop applications. And you are able to go to social media, Facebook, Twitter, etc. You're able also to address remote servers, getting data processing, etc. So all of these things are out there. Let me just move on here. And these are some, we already got this one. GM, Cadillac, Buick roll out their Android auto dealerships. Let me phone Chevrolet there also. GMC, I suppose. Okay, nonetheless, a number of GM brands are expanding their availability of Android Auto in many of their 2016 models. GMC, Buick are keeping the updates to only a few models, while Cadillac and Chevrolet are emerging with a wider rollout. And some of these brands here, Yukon, Sierra, Canyon, that's some of the GMC models and Buick. Cadillac CUE dash system, eligible for upgrades. There, I suppose, if you own a Cadillac. And owners of Chevrolet vehicles equipped with 8-inch MyLink screens have updates awaiting. So, in other words, there is a question, obviously, the security of those particular situations. There's an open-source BitTorrent out there. Client that was released after work of 2 years. This is... the transmission 2.90, and that was released back in February. These are some of the notes we've been keeping around. So nonetheless, so you can try that out. And let's see, this is pretty much what we covered custom and open source code, a new approach to application security management. This was also back in February. Security intelligence is where it came from. Expansive growth of open source software. Use of open source is ubiquitous across the web, cloud, containers, enterprise applications, mobile applications, the Internet of Things. We can put back all the glasses here. I think this is Black Duck. Yeah. He's an IBM security partner. Shows that open source code compromises about 30% of the average of the average commercial software. This figure could jump even higher in the in-house application. No doubt it has. What they are referring to here is mission open source will be included in mission critical applications within 99% of the global 2,000 enterprises by the end of this year. So more things, we like to do this, the role of application security testing. Automated security testing has advanced dramatically over the past 10 years, in particular in static and dynamic analysis tools that help organizations identify. And we talked a little bit about some of that with the GoDaddy experience of security vulnerabilities. Why is open source different? They asked this question. Open source has benefited from the idea that enough people will review the code to find the most security issues, no doubt. While the validity of this theory is partially dependent on who is reviewing the code, it appears that the most common security bugs are often identified during the development process. I would dispute that. That means that largest vulnerabilities are not present in the final patch. Well, not true of Microsoft products and many other products they are laying there. Security is not a permanent state, no doubt about that. A simple solution, know all your code. The good news is that a solution exists. New technology partners with IBM and Black Duck extend IBM solution portfolio to include identification, remediation, and control of risk in open source software. We'll have to look into this. The Black Duck Hub integrates into the build cycle. IBM Secure App Scan. Nonetheless, disclosure here, been an IBM partner for over 15 years and an IBM developer from the knowledge standpoint. We're not pushing this application, but nonetheless, it came across. But there are many, many good penetration testing open source type of applications out there. And this is from ZNet. Linux and open source have won, and get over it. This was in 2015. We've not had that many broadcasts, so we just had to bring this one out here. Microsoft embraced it. Yeah, we know about that. Apple's open source. It's the newest and hottest programming language. The cloud couldn't run without it. No doubt about that. That's more rhetorical there. That is from the day, if you remember, old Boehner said that Linux was basically a joke. And of course now that has changed. Today Microsoft isn't Bill Gates or Mr. Ballmer. Microsoft has brought in a .NET Core to a Linux. Very few young developers use it. It supports Debian Linux on its Azure Cloud and its own Linux certification. in 2016, or you'll see the company which offers the open source data or software that's on Ubuntu. Again, we talked about the Kinebra there. And the CEO now claims that Microsoft loves Linux, whereas it used to be Microsoft hated Linux. So now with the cloud there, we also, the 3.10 related, well, anyway, Microsoft makes billions from Azure, Samsung alone, Microsoft makes $1 billion a year for nothing except a promise Microsoft wants to. So it's, that's been one of the things out there, a stratagem of many of the proprietary software makers, Microsoft there, of suing various people, Google, Samsung, etc., on so-called existing profits. So nothing, nothing new there, but the world of open source versus the proprietary software. Now the Apple is a Swift language. So many people have heard of it. They have open sourced it because they had to. These changes are not out here just because these various proprietary operations, Microsoft, Apple, are progressive. They're out here.